Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Daniel Jones should know a lot about love. He's been the editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times for most of the past decade. He says during that time, he's read and heard some 50,000 laments and questions about love, heartache, yearning, searching, and marrying. He says the stories arrive by email around the clock, pouring into his laptop, dribbling out of his printer, and spilling across the tables of his office and home. Surely this makes him a bit of an expert on love, don't you think? Well, maybe or maybe not. As he writes in his book, Love Illuminated, I've not been mastering love all these years so much as marinating in it. Asking me what I've learned about love is like asking a pickle what he's learned about vinegar. Well, even so, Jones has been privy to the deepest personal revelations of tens of thousands of strangers, and that might not make him an expert, but it certainly gives him a lot to say about love in this modern age. Daniel Jones lives in Northampton, Massachusetts. His latest book is called Love Illuminated. Love Illuminated, Exploring Life's Most Mystifying Subject with the Help of 50,000 Strangers. And he joins us now from New York. And Daniel Jones, welcome to the program. Great to have you.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Really fun. So if editing 50,000 stories about other people's love lives doesn't make you an expert in love, how would you describe what you know about love after all of that?
Well, yeah, the marinating that I'd done for all those years was before I wrote this book, and I felt like the process of going back and looking at what I'd published and what I'd read was going to lead me to understand what the trends were, what technology was doing to relationships. You know, I felt like I'd been, as I said, marinating or stewing in this material,
yeah.
But I hadn't really gotten a handle on it and been able to pull back and get a handle on it. And that's really what the book project was about.
Yeah. Is there something, I mean, I know, you know, when it comes to the stories that you edit and that get published in the New York Times, they're all so different from one another in many ways. But is there one thing that sort of draws them together, that unites them? Is there one common thread that you're often struck by?
Well, to speak really broadly about it, people still want to find one person who is in some way meant for them and spend their lives together. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of new kinds of arrangements and new family arrangements and new ways of meeting people, but there does still seem to be that undeniable yearning for one person. And being with that person for decades and decades.
And yet you describe, and I love this came from your introduction, you describe the sea of love as a dark and scary place, deep, cold, impenetrable, and populated by billions of freakish creatures lurking in the depths with their gnashing teeth and electrified appendages. Why do you see it as such a foreboding place, the sea of love?
Well, part of it is what the column's about. You know, conflict is what drive storytelling. And so everyone writing to me is in some sort of conflict. Just like you don't like to hear so much your stories, you know, stories from people who have it all figured out. Readers really don't like stories from people who have it all figured out either. They like to read stories about people who are struggling and maybe come out the other end with a better understanding. So I get all the dark, deep, struggle. That's what
yeah.
I hear.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you sometimes feel like there's no new love story out there. And then along comes a column that really challenges that idea.
Well, there's so many, you know, love, that basic sense of attachment, I think, will always be the same. But the ways we meet people and the ways we form connections are so different today than they were in the past. And I don't really think we've gotten a handle on it. With meeting people online, whether it's through online dating or through social media, and that sort of emotional connection that can form, that really didn't used to be possible except in these odd, you know, letter-writing romances or something like that. But this real-time relationship with someone online is new.
Yeah, it really is. And this is connected actually to what I wanted to ask you about your most recent Modern Love column. It was called Healing Sought, Bring Your Own Magic. And it's written by 42-year-old Laura Zam. She suffered sexual abuse as a child, struggled to find a romantic relationship, And what was related to what you just said was she reconnects through Facebook with someone that she knew and loved long ago. Can you tell her story a little bit?
Yes, this she was casting about like so many people do in midlife, and one consequence of this Facebook age and social media age and online dating age is trust becomes a really important issue. That we're exposed to so many more people than we were in the past, and so in her case, she was casting about, and what was really after having bad experiences with men, and what was so appealing to her was someone from her past, someone she'd connected with before. There's an added comfort to finding that kind of person these days. And there's also an added emphasis on sort of fate and circumstance. And if there are going to be so many people out there to choose from, what is that moment of fate or coincidence that's going to bring us together? And mm-hmm. we load that up with all kinds of meaning. And she did that too. You know, he happened to be coming to her city. She happened to be available, even though she normally wasn't on that night. All these things added up in her head as thinking, yeah, well, this is really meant to be.
Well, it's funny because I love some of the details in her story, because she actually goes to a friend who's very new agey and sort of says to her, if you believe it, he will come, or words to that effect. You have to sort of visualize this person who will come. And she kind of went away thinking, oh, that's a bunch of hogwash. But then she began sort of imagining this guy that she used to know and used to love and went online. And sure enough, he was coming to town doing a sort of dramatic piece. So he was
exactly.
He was coming to her town, and they reconnect at that point.
Right. And you know, especially for people in midlife, or even anyone from almost 30 years old on, this search becomes so fraught. And, how do we go about it? Is it better if we work really hard at it, or should we truly just leave it to fate? We want this connection to be magical, but all the work that we're able to do to find love doesn't feel magical at all.
That's interesting.
So we grasp onto these... she had all. She believed this thing, like in that book, The Secret, where if you just believe hard enough and
right.
wish hard enough, your wish will be fulfilled.
Yeah. Well, in her case, it seemed to be the case. What's your feeling about that after editing all of these pieces over these years? In other words, is it better to take advantage of all of the ways that we can work really hard, whether it's Facebook or social media or whatever it is, or should we just be relaxing and leaving this a little more to fate?
Well, part of it is that we're putting off that one serious relationship until much later.
Mm.
And, the typical person these days does not want to get married at 21 or 24 or even 26. And the average age is pushing closer to 30, but our biological clock has not been gotten the same sort of extension. So it's turned into this bottleneck of, like, people between the ages of 28 and 34. And they have to work hard. They just don't feel like they have enough time to laze around and wait for that that magical moment to happen. So people are making use of every tool out there. I think you have to be, and what I write about in the book, is you have to be just aware of what those kinds of systems are doing to you and the ways in which they make you choose and rule out people. And are those really people you want to rule out? Do you want to rule out people by income and by height and by weight and by age, and is that really, do you want to be that cautious, in other words, in your approach?
This really gets to the whole issue of expectations and what people are looking for and how they sort of strive for it in trying to put together a long-term relationship. And we want to play a piece of tape. So this is from a TED Talk. Psychotherapist Esther Perel makes an argument about modern marriage that I'd like to get your reaction to. So let's listen.
So we come to one person and we basically are asking them to give us what once an entire village used to provide. Give me belonging, give me identity, give me continuity, but give me transcendence and mystery and awe all in one. Give me comfort, give me edge. Give me novelty, give me familiarity. Give me predictability, give me surprise. And we think it's a given, and toys and lingerie are going to save us with that.
So Daniel Jones, I wanted to get your reaction. I mean, there's a great description of sort of everything we demand and need of love, right? Give me comfort, give me edge, give me novelty, give me familiarity, give me predictability, give me surprise. What do you think? Do we need to lower our expectations a little bit?
Exactly. I mean, I'm completely on board with her take on this. And I think the reason for it is we're all more independent spirits these days. So, you know, marriage used to be for more practical reasons. We really needed each other for our complementary skills. And now everybody, we don't really need each other anymore. So instead, we load up a marriage with just this sense of soulmate and love and connection. And that may sound nice. And, you know, it is nice if it works, but it's also a lot of pressure to think, I've got to love this person all the time for the next 50 years, and I've got to feel turned on by them, and we've got to have a passionate marriage, or why be together? Because we don't otherwise need each other. And that's tough. It can work out well. But as she was saying, that's just a lot to have to one person fulfill all these roles in your life is just a lot to expect. And that's what we think going in that we're going to get.
I'm curious, of all these stories that you edit, what's the proportion of happy endings to sad endings? Are most of them happy or most of them sad or somewhere in the middle?
Well, that's a really interesting question. And I'm going to say it depends on what your definition of happy or sad is, because there's hardly a column. The most common comment we get about columns is, why are they always so depressing and why do they always have happy endings? To some people, a sad ending is when someone breaks up. To me, a sad ending is when someone is as dumb at the end of the piece as they were at the beginning. And if someone is able to learn something and really see how they behave in a new way and be able to move on, it doesn't matter the circumstance. You know, if they lost love but they gain knowledge, to me, that's a happy ending. So in that sense, I only publish stories that have happy endings.
I see. Interesting. So, Daniel, you're married, have a couple of kids. You live in Western Massachusetts. And I'm wondering if doing this job for the past decade has affected the way you look at your own marriage at all.
It has. I mean, I can answer this question one way if my wife is not around, which she isn't right now.
She might be listening.
If she's around and I start to talk about how it's made me understand women better and all that, then I have to face her rolling eyes. What the column has done for me and what it does for readers is it makes you more empathetic to people in situations that they're struggling with in relationships, or maybe it's a situation that you would have dismissed as being too odd. You know, that we've published several essays about, two in fact, about people who were in a marriage where one person in the marriage then went through a sex change operation and became, you know, the marriages went from straight marriages essentially to gay marriages and stayed together. That's a situation where, and if you hear about it in the abstract, it sounds like, well, that's just impossible. No one would do that, and that's just too out there. When you hear the story, a story like that being told from the person going through it, it has an impact. It's harder to dismiss, and you feel for the people.
Sure. Well, Daniel Jones, it's a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for coming in and talking about this. And good luck on the next 10 years of editing stories about love for The New York Times.
Oh, thank you so much.
That's Daniel Jones, editor of The New York Times column Modern Love. He's author of Love Illuminated, Exploring Life's Most Mystifying Subject with the Help of 50,000 Strangers. He lives in Northampton, Mass., with his wife and two children. And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.